Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rancid Taco Movie Review Podcast. I'm Skylar Sanders, here with Mason Weir, the Nori to my Poppy.
I'll take it, because Nori is the better of the two.
You wouldn't say that if I said Samwise and Frodo, and that's obviously the same comparison of the two.
That's what they're going for, but it's nothing like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But tonight, we are going to wrap up our journey through Middle-earth as we conclude the Rings of Power series with a good old award show.
Nothing like wrapping everything up with an award show and knowing that you're finally done with the chunk of work that you set out to do. And we embarked on a nice long 8-episode journey here. And our first foray into television, well, not television, is Amazon, whatever.
It's television.
It's television, right? It's the it's the new television.
Is it going to be our last, or are we on board for all the following seasons too?
We're going to have to do some research and check these numbers and see if it's worth it, because 8 episodes was actually kind of grinding by the end of it.
It was, and also our listenership has taken a nosedive since we started.
Well, I don't think a lot of people are watching this show yet, but once this show actually catches fire and takes off, we're going to be the ones that were there first.
Yeah, this might be Sauron's first markings that we're making here in the cave somewhere.
Absolutely. Sauron's first marking. We're still shape-shifting.
We are. Hey, let's shape-shift on into the first award. What have we got coming up?
All right, for the first award, we have the Master Smith, which is the Best Actor Award. And why don't you go ahead and start us off with that one?
All right, I will start us off, and I might be stealing from you here, but to me, the best acting performance is going to go to, and we haven't actually named any of the actors, I don't think, in this series. So the actor's name is Owain Arthur, and the character is Durin the Dwarf.
Wow, that's way out of pocket. I had no clue.
Oh, you weren't going to say Durin either, huh?
I was not going to say Durin. He wasn't even on my top two.
Well, I found that a lot of his scenes didn't mean much, but the way that he acted within the scenes made the scenes memorable to me.
Yeah.
And they were good relationships that he had with his father, good conversations he always had with Elrond and Disa, always conveyed the appropriate emotion, and the best line deliveries. Even though all of them had to work with bad lines, he had the best delivery, I think, of all the actors.
Oh, 100%. I don't dislike the pick at all. I actually think he did a really, really good – he did it really well. He performed really well. And, you know, it was just like like you're saying, he nailed everything. He all of his stuff was right on par, and it made sense. And he was very believable in his role, and he fit the role well. He's well cast in it. So I liked him a lot, too. I'm surprised I didn't think of him.
A little different portrayal for a dwarf, too. Different than what we're normally seeing for dwarves.
For sure. It was like a softer, friendlier dwarf. One we could relate to and enjoy, I think.
Yep. So who did you pick?
I went with old Charlie Vickers, Mr. Ooh. Sauron himself.
Hal Brand.
Yeah, off-brand, or Aragorn Light.
Or Diet Aragorn.
Yeah, and to me, like, he did everything I wanted Galadriel to do, right? He contained everything and played everything close to the vest. And then whenever it came time to unleash what was going on, it hit so much harder. And I just thought he was believable the whole time, because in the beginning, everybody's like, oh, he's Sauron. I was like, nah, I don't think he's Sauron. And then even up to the end, the last episode where we finally find out he is Sauron, I was like, all right, okay, he is Sauron. Like, he had me sold through the whole entirety of the show that, you know, he wasn't Sauron.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do a 180 on my Hal Brand take from the whole series. I hated the way he looked, but I was kind of shitting on the actor and the character and everything. In hindsight, now that the first season of the story is told, the story of Hal Brand is really cool, and the acting performance given by, what's his name, Charlie Vickers?
Charlie Vickers, yeah.
Yeah, it actually was, I was considering giving this award to him, and I was like, no, that's too much of a concession for what I've been saying. But I will admit, great pick, and he did an excellent job in season one.
Yeah. I thought he really nailed it. And I'm excited to see where he can go further. Does he get more evil? Does he try to stay on the side of half evil, half good? What is he? So I'm excited about that.
Is he even going to still be in the show, or is he going to shapeshift into some other actor? Charlie Vickers might be gone.
Well, I heard Adar's a shapeshifter. We got a press release that Adar is going to be doing some shapeshifting in the next season, right?
Yeah, breaking Ranted Taco news. The actor that played Adar has opted out of season two, and they're just going to recast him. Man, I hate when TV shows do that.
So did he opt out or did they fire him?
I think he opted out. He said he wanted to pursue other endeavors.
Yeah,
like that.
He was like, I'm not going to be on this sinking ship when it goes
down. You might be right, but man, that's a negative way to look at it. If you're the actor, and also...
That is. He must have something really awesome lined up because they spend so much money on this. I can't imagine he's not getting like a small paycheck for this.
Well, that's kind of fucked up, though. Like, if you commit to season one, you know you're going to be in more seasons. To quit after one, I don't know. I can't get behind that.
Yeah, I don't like that. If he quit, if he made an obligation to do it and they're banking everything on the continuity of his character, then he should stick around and fulfill his role.
Agreed. It's kind of like demanding a trade mid-season. You know?
Yeah,
don't,
I mean,
don't do it.
Just like, you know, have them kill you off next season. I'm sure they were going to anyways.
Yeah, they probably are going to anyway. But let's not get into that because we do have a prediction segment coming
up. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so next, let's get moving to the next award. Next up, we have the Lowman Award, which goes to the worst actor.
Yeah, let you go ahead and go first on this one.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. And it's not who you think I'm going to pick, okay?
It better not be.
I'm not going Galadriel, all right?
Good.
She wasn't that bad. I just had a lot of issues with her. But I am going to go Maxim Baldry, who played Isildur.
Easy choice.
Easy target. Like, he was low-hanging fruit, and I took it. All right? He's just... Nothing about him says kingly. Nothing about him says anything remotely into what my idea of the character of Isildur should be. So, to me, it was just easy pickings. And not only that, but I just didn't like his performance in anything. He didn't do anything to wow me. So, he was an easy target, and I took it down for you. So,
yeah, it's hard to convey... incel dweeb in this world, but Isildur somehow does it. I mean, this guy's such a loser. I mean, his character's a loser. The actor brings nothing to the role. He has no, obviously they're all written poor lines, but he does nothing to improve upon them. I agree. That was some low hanging fruit and an easy choice.
Yeah. Why did, like, the casting of him was just like, what? Come on.
Well, it was such an easy choice that I went a different route. And this is actually a shared award for me.
Lowman?
Yeah, you're going to be surprised by this one, too. Low men and low women.
Oh.
Because it is a tie for the worst performance for me from Arondir and Bronwyn. They were a third of the season, and they were given a lot to work with. We can't say they didn't have their opportunities, and nothing that they did or said made me feel anything. No attachment toward them. I mean, they had cool scenes, but
yeah,
they themselves, nothing about their acting impressed me.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you chose honestly and you weren't just, you know, thinking with your dick there, because that I thought maybe you were going to go with Bronwyn. You would leave Bronwyn out of the bad acting category just because, you know,
she's hot.
You had a thing for her.
She's hot. She is.
Yeah.
But no, her acting was really bad, and actually, I've seen this guy that plays Arondir. Ishmael Cruz Cordova is his name. I've seen him in other things, and he's not bad. So I almost feel like he just fell into the trap set by the predecessors of elf actors, where he feels like he has to be wooden and stiff. And none of the other elves on this show are. So it's almost like maybe Bronwyn rubbed off on him, or maybe he was taking a cue from Legolas in previous movies, but... just very uninspired from Arondir.
I mean, I felt bad for him because I feel like he had to do a lot for his character. I felt like all of his stuff was original, so he had to bring it, you know, and make it fun, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but it was like, yeah, it was just, I thought he was tasked with a hard task, and I didn't think he did a bad job, but I definitely wasn't blown away by his performance.
Yeah, just the fact that they were given so much screen time, I found
they
were pretty weak.
Yeah, for sure. So let's move along here to next up, the Samwise special. The Poppy special.
The Poppy special.
Yeah, and this goes to the best supporting actor or actress. And I have a feeling we're both going to go the same route.
You think so? I think we might not.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with the most punk rock anti-hero that we see in this series, and that is Waldrig.
Waldrig. Yay, we're definitely not going the same.
Have but you heard of him?
Have you heard of him? Have you heard of Sauron?
Have you heard of the power of Sauron?
Oh, that's a good choice, man. That is a really good choice. I don't know if he was almost a cameo, though. I don't even know if he qualifies as supporting.
Well, he started out in a really small role, but by the end of his appearances, he was, like I said, the most punk rock dude on the screen. He's injecting the sword into his arm. He's starting chants everywhere he goes. He's taking over cities. He's betraying his friends. He's killing young teenage elves. Like, this guy was awesome, and the actor just killed it the whole time.
Yeah, all in the name of Sauron, except when Sauron didn't show up and it was Adar, and he was like, well, fuck it, I come this far. So Adar it is.
Yeah, he'll jump ship. Adar. He doesn't care.
Adar, and then he starts the Adar chant.
What should we call it, Lord? Adar.
Yeah, that was the best. Is he asks him a question, and instead of waiting for a response, he cues the chant behind.
Oh, yeah, he knows what the crowd wants. He's just kind of nudging it along.
He's the voice of Adar, the mouth of Adar instead of the mouth of Sauron.
Well, if you didn't think of Waldrig, the Stone Cold of Middle Earth, then I'm gonna guess. Well, I don't want to guess. I know what your pick is, though, and go ahead and say it.
Adar.
Oh, is that actually your pick?
Yeah, Joseph Malway. How do you know? What's his name?
Malway sounds good.
Malway. He was my favorite supporting character, I think, in this entire show. And I don't know what it was. Like, he brought a great intensity. I liked the character that was written for him. I enjoyed that part of it. And I thought he was like, he had a lot going on behind his eyes. There was like sadness and hate and anger all at the same time. So it was like kind of all coming out at once, which was pretty cool.
That is a good pick. I'm not sure he qualifies as supporting, though. I would consider him to be one of the main characters. I mean, he's probably the main villain of season one.
I mean, no, I don't think so. Sauron's got to be the main villain.
You don't even see him until the last few minutes.
Adar's in maybe four episodes. That's half the episodes, you know? And not even, like, he has, yeah, I don't know. It's borderline. I guess I went high-end supporting actor. You went
low-end.
Yeah, low-man, high. Like, I went on the closer to lead. You went closer to
supporting. Not,
like, yeah, mild support. I don't know what they would call that.
As is the title of the award.
No, they're both on the line. They're just on the opposite ends of the spectrum is what I'm saying.
You know, I thought you were going to pick was Sadok.
He's my number two. Yeah, I actually wrote him down as my second.
Yeah,
so
he gets
an honorable mention. So Sadok, we both shared our like of, I guess.
Yeah, R.I.P. Sadok.
Mm. Man, he took a knife right in the liver.
Yeah, at least he got to see the sunset for a couple of seconds.
I think I'm going to sit here and wait for the sun to... Oh, shit, it's up.
Well, hey, speaking of a couple of seconds, how many seconds do you think you could last with the candidate for the Mithril Stiffy?
Well, not long at all for me.
Well...
I think you know who I'm picking.
I think I do, and I want to hear you say it. So go ahead and go first. Who's the winner for the traditional Golden Stiffy Award, now renamed the Mithril Stiffy?
The Mithril Stiffy Award goes to, no surprise here for me, Sophia Nonvetta. Is that how you pronounce that?
Lady Disa.
Lady Disa, with those power thighs and ankles and, oh my God, that attitude. Yeah, she just had me from square one.
I kept waiting for you to turn over the other leaf on this joke, and it's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
You're super horny for Disa.
I don't know why. I'm super attracted to her, and I think that she's going to take it home for the Mithril Stiffy Award.
All right, well, you've been talking her up this entire time, and who am I to judge? I mean, I like a bigger woman, too, though Disa doesn't do anything for me. Her eyes really frighten me, but...
That's what I found so sexy were those, I don't want to say steely eyes. I want to say scorpion eyes.
Yeah, they're
You know, like
fiery amphibious eyes.
Amphibious eyes. She had like gold eyes or something. Like that was very weird.
Yeah, pretty scary, I thought. But her attitude contributed to that too.
Strangely alluring, decent. It's not typical of me to be attracted to this type of woman, but she was getting it done.
Hey, well, props to you for your honesty.
Thank you.
Did you have a runner up, or did she have your full stiffy?
No, I didn't have a runner up. I would say if I was gonna pick the runner up, it would be Bronwyn, I guess. Like, yeah, probably Bronwyn. I don't know. Well, or Elronda's twink elf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's for the next one, though.
Yeah. Well, it's who knows which one he falls under.
Are we going to make these awards gender fluid so you can pick a woman for the man's award and vice versa?
Well, I can. All right, I got he's the man for this award. I actually have a woman for the next award too, for the moisturizer.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. You have one of each gender. Mm-hmm. Nice. You're like the Noah of the Ranted Taco Awards.
Well, I just, now that I think of it, I have, because I actually thought about picking this person just to throw a little monkey wrench in the system there, but I didn't go with it.
Well, for my choice, you've already named her. And it was a close call for me, actually, between Bronwyn, who wins the award, the inventor of cleavage in Middle-earth. It was a close call between her and the girl who we never figured out her character's name. I think we settled on Iarian. That's the the sister of Isildur.
Yeah.
I'm a real sucker for the dark hair, dark eyed look, and both these girls have it. But I want to give the edge to Bronwyn, one for the, the attire that she chooses, and two, because I did shit on her in the Low Man Award. So I want to raise her back up here with a stiffy nominee, a stiffy win.
Well, that's nice of you, because you're not showing favoritism here. You praised her for her looks or whatever it was, and then you gave her the just award for her acting. So I like where you went with it.
Best of both worlds, but well, half of the best and half of the worst for Bronwyn.
Yeah, but I mean, we can both agree that I don't think Galadriel hits the list, though, does she?
Oh, yeah. She would have been a close third for me, actually. She was.
I mean, she's got to be the third female. There's only, like, one more to pick.
There's Deesa and the queen, Queen Muriel.
Oh, yeah, Muriel. Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess there's a few more. But I just did something about Galadriel's smile. I didn't like it. Like, her face was weird. I don't know. All right, well, enough of that. Let's get on to the one that we really want to get to.
Oh, yeah, baby. I didn't have a cute Middle Earth name for this one. Can you come up with one on the fly?
I would say Moisturizer of Power. I don't know.
We could just reuse Mithril and call it the Mithril.
Yeah, the Mithril. Oh, the Mithril Moisturizer actually works better for this one.
All right, well, let's go for that then.
All right, we'll go Mithril Stiffy, Mithril Moisturizer.
All right, who's going first?
I'll go first there for you. And I got to go with the partner to your Bronwyn, Ismael Cruz Cordova, who played Arondir. And he's got, that nice Puerto Rican milky skin. He's got those eyes. He would qualify as steely eyes, and I think he would be the one that's getting the ladies all fired up.
I agree that he's good looking and he would get ladies fired up, but steely eyes, come on, man. Those are not steely.
He had steely eyes, bro.
He's got blue, wandering, daydreaming eyes. He does not have the steely eyes of a Faramir Alfarazone.
But they're really nice eyes. What would you classify these ones? Deesa had scorpion eyes.
These are dreamboat eyes.
Dreamy eyes. Okay, yeah, dreamy eyes then.
Yeah, he was dreamy. But he had, I don't know, something about his face. He just
I don't like your face, buddy.
He had a great looking face. He's just got like a certain amount of cheek fat that always wiggles around, and it's like,
oh, I did notice that. Yeah. Well, he's probably a little older. He's probably hiding. You know, he said he was stationed there for 75 years. So I mean, Jesus.
That's true. He is up there in years.
Yeah. What do you want from the guy? It's 75 years he's been there, just there. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what I want. And it'll lead right into my pick, because I said I didn't pick Arondir because maybe, as you said, maybe he's a little too old. I went a little bit younger here for my selection. And I kind of dropped some hints throughout the series. I referred to this guy as the handsome friend of Isildur.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And it, the award goes to Valindil.
With the nice curly hair shaking slow motion in the boat and the sunrise over his shoulders and all that.
Oh, yeah. Always staring off into the distance. It looks like he's in a Head and Shoulders commercial while also being like an Old Spice commercial. He's got it all.
Yeah, he was pretty good looking. I give it to him. He was good. But I didn't get much from his performance, so you know.
Well, this isn't about the
performance. Yeah, it's not about performance, so I don't know.
He could perform for me.
Go on.
You know what I'm saying, babe.
I think I do. Yeah. Yeah, he's got to wear one of those rings of power tonight.
Yep. Well, hey, on that that rising of our inner temperatures, maybe we should take a quick break.
And wait, hold on. I had the female version of this award.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Who's the female winner of the Mighty Moisturizer?
Yeah, so the lady that got the other ladies excited would have to go do Bridie Sisson, the Dweller. She was the Eminem lookalike character.
Nice.
Like when I think Bull Dyke, I think of this type of girl, and she really nails it.
She does nail it, and she's got some curves going on under that dress. You can see. So
yeah, in fact, all three of them. I think all three should just be grouped in. We should just call them Morgoth's lesbians.
All right, I'm on board. I like that. Sure.
I don't know though.
All right. Well, are we ready to take a quick break and then come back for the back half of the Wings of Power award show?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. With a nobody goes off trail.
Nobody walks alone.
Ha ha.
Ho ho.
Is it better or worse when we do it than when Sadok does it?
I think it's about the same. We nailed the lyrics.
About the same.
I'm surprised we remembered that whole song in one watching.
Yeah, that sounds like a song that you would actually be able to remember.
Is that an Eddie Vedder song or?
Oh, yeah. Let's sing it Eddie Vedder style.
Or a Phil Collins song or a live song.
Nobody walks off trail.
Nobody walks alone.
All right. Anyway, let's move this thing along here with the best fight.
Yeah.
A lot of fighting in the series and different kinds of fights, too.
I didn't think there was a whole lot of large battles, though, were there?
Well, there were pitched battles. There were individual battles. There were mock battles.
Yeah.
I think by the end of the series, all these fights and battles will pale in comparison to the final season. But for what we got here in the first season, you know, when they're just trickling in the story, I think we got a fair amount of combat. And it was one of the things that was actually well done.
Yeah. I really did like the fight choreography. And particularly in the one that I picked. So that's the reason it wins for me. And it's not even a battle. It's not even a fight. But it wins. It wins because the fight choreography was so good, I thought.
What's the winner?
Galadriel trains the whelps.
Oh, nice pick there.
Yeah. It was, I have to say, like, it's some of the best fight choreography. Like, it was literally a dance with swords. And they were doing such a good job of pulling it off that it stuck out in my mind. It was one of my favorite parts of the season, and it was just fun. It was just kind of fun to see Galadriel take on a new like air of dignity with the way like the respect that everybody was giving her, and how badass she was. Like she was blocking swords behind her back and spinning and twisting and like always doing these pull ups where she could have killed the other person. It just showed how good she was, And then it was just a fun dance to me. So that won my favorite.
Yeah, it was a good example of why elves are so much better than men in this world. Yeah.
And just exactly how much better they are.
And yeah, like, exactly a good barometer of how much better that she could take on 6 to 8 soldiers, Numenorean soldiers, like it's nothing.
Yeah, and she could have like everybody that was in that town square, she probably could have killed if it had actually been a battle.
In seconds. Agreed. Well, my best fight also involved the elves, but it was not that one. It was an actual fight, and it was the fight between Arondir and his commander elf, versus the orcs in the slave camp.
Wait, what?
Yeah, do you remember in the third episode when they decide that they're going to have the insurrection against their...
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, so they're using the chains. They're whipping them with the chains.
Oh, he does some badass stuff in that, too.
Yeah, I really, really love the visual of them using the, like, the momentum of the chain to hit the guys holding... You know, they're supposed to be whipping the elves with these chains, but instead they use momentum, and they're very clever in this attack strategy. Then they start hammering away at the chains to free themselves. They fight the warg, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, Arondir brings down the whole, like, tent thing on top of them and exposes them to the sunlight.
Yeah. All very cool, and it came early enough in the season that it was one of those scenes where I was kind of losing a little bit of faith in the show, and it was one of the things that kind of brought me back. Like, episode three was good. And that's a big part of it for me.
Yeah, it definitely added an excitement at a time where we were both questioning why we were there.
we were starved for any excitement. And it delivered.
It was like they could have literally done anything in that battle and we'd have been like, all right, it's action. Here we go. Because it was moving very slowly and that was the first bit of action we got into.
I had a runner up for this one too.
Yes, me too.
Oh, okay. Maybe we have the same one. That'd be cool.
Probably. Go ahead.
It is, for me anyway, Theo and Bronwyn against the ear-haired orc in the cabin when the two of them are fighting against the very first orc that we see.
Yeah, and they, like, cut his head off and stuff?
Yeah, they, like, lift him up with that pulley system, and then they eventually cut his head off, but they stab him in the back. They're running from him in the ladder. Very exciting two-on-one fight.
Yeah, that was actually not bad. Though it was short, I guess it was not real long, right? It was probably, like, maybe a 4 or 5 minute battle.
Yeah, if that.
But... It was good, and that was our first introduction to the orcs, which was kind of fun. I think it was the first time we actually got a real good close look at an orc, and that was cool.
Yeah.
My runner up was Gandalf versus the lesbians, though. So.
I'm good.
I am good. Yeah. So like that, I thought that fight was pretty awesome. Mostly had not so much with the fight choreography; it had much more to do with the special effects that were being used, the leaves whipping around, the fire going up and going down, and him turning them into, like, moths and stuff. And
the Harfoots throwing the rocks.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, like, it had a lot more to do with the ambiance of the whole fight, not exactly the fighting of it.
Right, and the rocks, too.
Did I say rocks?
Well, that's part of the scene. You chose this.
Well, that wasn't really an important part of it. Or even of Hobbits in general, so.
All right, I won't.
Don't start that again.
For your sake, I won't rehash that here on the award show. It's all good vibes on the award show.
All good vibes on the award show, you son of a bitch.
No one needs to know how I build a pony to you about Hobbits throwing rocks.
First of all, just using Bill the Pony's term is a term that I used about pulling you through the first Lord of the Rings movies. So you are using a term that I created for you, okay? So don't even try to start throwing that on me now.
I turned it into a verb, and that's what it is now.
You just turned it into a verb, and it's not working, okay? It's just not working.
It worked.
Yeah, it kind of worked. All right, let's move along here.
Let's move it on here. Two, this is always a fun award because it could be anything. And it is for me, especially.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most memorable moment.
Yeah. I feel like I just actually kind of spoiled mine.
Yeah, you spoiled mine, actually. I'll just say it. Mine was Galadriel's dance that you mentioned as the best fight.
Oh, shit. Okay, good. I didn't spoil mine. Well, I spoiled mine, but not yours.
What was yours?
Mine was, I am good! Yeah, that whole scene with him... Because, you know, we thought he was Sauron, then he comes back, and he's now not Sauron, and we think he's the Stranger. Wait, no.
Yeah, Rocket Stranger. Man!
Rocket Man! Should I make a better level in our town? Yes, I made it all the way through and never learned those lyrics.
Yes, you did. Damn it. I wanted you to learn them, but whatever.
Yeah. I should have sang them like Eddie Vedder, though, but...
Yeah, actually, looking back, though, I don't think I've shown enough love to Rocket Man in this award show. I should have given him something here because he is a very memorable character, and a lot of his moments were memorable. Even just small lines of dialogue when he says, no, I'm good. He's convincing himself that he's good. Yeah, he says, yeah. I'm peril, or stay away from me. I'm peril. All yeah, these little moments with him were really good.
His character builds and grows so much. And yeah, like you're saying, there's like this beautiful childlike wonder about him in the beginning where he's like still learning things and almost like a child. And then he, by the end of the season, you know, becomes pretty much a full-fledged wizard, I think. Like,
well, they say he's a wizard. We're just wondering which one he is now.
Yeah, well, we don't know which one, but it's like he's back. He's there. He's like got all of his memories sort of like intact, and now he understands what he is and who he is and what he's got to go do. So it was a fun transformation, and he did such a good job playing the part.
Yeah, excellent job there from Daniel Wayman was the actor, I believe.
Yeah, he could have taken it. He was probably a close runner-up for my best actor.
Yeah, he was in the running for me as well.
Yeah.
Well, I did have a runner-up for this one, and I know you're going to remember this one forever, and I will too. It's probably going to stand up as the trademark from the Rings of Power series, and that is the moment when the Low Man delivers the huge uppercut to Hal Brand, and then he beats them down. Really, it's just the uppercut and the exclamation of Low Man. I'm always going to remember that. I don't know why. I don't know why we clung to it so much, but we both liked that moment, at least when we recorded
it. Just because the super uppercut that followed it, I think. That really, because the way he said it, he goes, Low Man.
Shuriken.
Yeah, Hoduken. like he lifted him up off the ground, not just with the uppercut, but with his voice.
Hal Brand, of course, walks it off with, call me Hal Brand.
Well, you know what's really fucked up is to think about the fact that that was Sauron at that time, just letting himself get an ass whooping in the alleyway, just being like, ah, you know what, I can't blow my cover.
Well, yeah, just... he didn't take much of a beating. He knew he would kick their asses, so he was like, don't do this, guys, and then he did it.
Yeah, that's true. He did kick their asses, I guess, so that makes sense.
He almost killed them. He's lucky. They're lucky he didn't.
Oh, yeah, the one where he snaps the guy's arm against the door or whatever he did. Oh, that was pretty nasty. That's a memorable moment right there for me.
Definitely.
All right, so that leads us into our next section, which is going to need a little explaining, I guess. It's called Morgoth's Metals, and it's the breaking of the lore. So the episodes that broke the lore for us, and I guess calling it Morgoth's Metals was like, you know, Morgoth would be happy that just we were so unhappy with this.
Yeah, Morgoth loves destruction, and this was destroying the world that Tolkien laid down. Different things that happened.
Yeah, and that was Morgoth's whole goal. So his whole goal was to destroy Middle Earth, and congratulations, they did it.
They did. They found ways to do it, and we're about to name off at least a couple of them.
Yeah, so number one for me has got to be Galadriel jump ship.
You didn't like her jumping off the boat to Valinor?
No, just, well, and this, that's what I labeled it, but it's the whole idea that she could be let back into Valinor by Gil-galad, who is not, you know, doesn't have the whole thing to let her back in. Then she says, I don't know if I'm going to do it. And then she gets on the boat, sails all the way out there, and right at the moment when and that was a beautiful scene when the, like, sky opens up and they're getting ready to go into what you would think of as heaven or the Garden of Eden or whatever it is. And then she just leaps off the ship and is like, nah, fuck it, I'm out.
And she left her armor on the boat, but she mysteriously gets it back later on, which bothers me probably more than anything else in the scene.
Well, and yeah, I mean, you can't swim in armor. So if she had jumped in with her armor, she would have definitely sunk. So at least,
for sure. But how did she get it back is the point.
Yeah, well, they got elven armor laying around at every elven armor shop, I'm sure.
I guess so.
That's what it would appear.
So that's the worst breaking of the lore is Galadriel's departure and all things involved with that.
I think that, I mean, I didn't rank them, but that's the first one that jumped to my mind.
Yeah, the one I wrote down as the top thing I didn't like was very similar, and it was the portrayal of Gil-galad in general. Including that moment where he's basically the Saint Peter for Valinor, allowing and disallowing people to go. But all throughout the season, we talked about, why is Gil-galad a villain? He's not supposed to be. He's the High King, the final High King of the Noldor, yet he's kind of this bumbling supervisor.
Turn him, yeah, they, well, not even, they turn him into like the angry dad of the elves.
Yeah, I'm so disappointed in you, Galadriel. I'm so disappointed in you, Elrond. I'm so disappointed, Celebrimbor.
I'm so old and crotchety and stuck in my ways that you're all going to have to hate me, okay? And that's fine if you do, but I'm doing it for your own good. And that's kind of what they made him, and that's just not who Gil-galad is in the story, so...
And the actor leans right into it. He's pompous as hell the whole time.
Oh, I hated that actor.
Hated the actor. Hated the acting performance. Hated the character. Hated the lines written for him. Yeah. Everything about Gil-galad was bad.
Gil-galad was just a complete swing and a miss for them, I thought.
Gil-galad. The other thing I wrote that bothered me a lot, though not as much after I've settled down a little bit, but man, this pissed me off the first time I saw it, was the entire thing with the Mithril. The conception of the Mithril, the importance of the Mithril, all that was new. I guess you can kind of make it fit if you hammer it in there, but we shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't have to make excuses.
Now, that made my list, too. I picked three things, and that was one of mine as well, and it just Mithril had such a small significance, really, in the larger story of Middle Earth, and why they decided to just pick that out and give it like all this extra special power, and the creation story of how Mithril happened and all that. And it was just like, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why have you bastardized this? Like,
it felt like fan service because people know Mithril from the other things.
Yeah, but it was fan disservice. I mean, anybody that's an actual fan, I think, is. It was fan service in the sense that it was something that we knew, but it was like, first of all, that whole thing was just junk. Like the whole storyline of them figuring out that they needed to get anything in order to survive in a matter of 3 months or whatever it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's like the elves have been around for thousands of years and all of a sudden they just forgot, like, you know, they just were the procrastinator elves that were just like, oh shit, we forgot. Our powers are fading. We're going to die if we don't get some Mithril in 3 months. That was ridiculous.
Which reflects poorly on Gil-galad once again as the king. Like, come on, dude, you got to have a plan. If you don't want to fade away, you don't wait till 3 months and then start doing something.
Yeah, exactly. So that was an issue for him. Like, I mean, you know, he's like the head coach. If he's going to get the credit, the credit, then for anything that else do good, then he's got to take the losses too in there. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, speaking of taking losses, you said you had one more. What was the third one?
I have one more, and it's not as big as the last two, but it definitely fits the list. And it's called, I labeled it Isildur's MacGuffin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, we know Isildur's not dead. Why are you trying to trick us into thinking he's dead? Like anybody that knows anything about this story knows that Isildur lives and goes on to eventually, spoiler alert, help vanquish Sauron. So it was just really, really why? It's just a big why question of why do you do this?
They might answer why next season or in a later season, but I'm with you. How stupid. Everyone, like you said, literally everyone, if you've watched the first 10 minutes of Lord of the Rings, even people that don't like Lord of the Rings make it through 10 minutes. Everyone knows Isildur is alive and well.
Cut the ring.
I mean, we all know what happens. Come on. He's not dead.
Yeah, he's not dead. So, like, don't give us a big he's dead thing. Like, maybe do it different. If you want, maybe he gets carried off or captured or something else like that. It's just like, if you want to get him out of our sight and like things are going on for his world, then don't do it with a fake death scene because we know he's not dead.
Yeah. At least show him recovering before the end of this season. So it's not such a cheap cliffhanger.
Yeah. All right. So we've harped on that one long enough, I think, but that sums up in short, a lot of the issues that were really, really kind of, I don't want to say they're small issues because, like, they had a lot to do with me not liking this show. Things like this. Smaller things, yes, but these are the three major.
Yeah, it wasn't a perfect season, that's for sure. And Morgoth's medals got passed out because of it.
Yeah. So next up, we got the best original character. And I got two. It's pretty easy pick for me, I think.
I had a really hard time with this one, actually.
Oh, yeah?
It depends on what you're quantifying as an original character, though, because some of these characters aren't original, but this portrayal of them is. So, like, Galadriel is not an original character, but they've never shown her in this light.
No, yes, she wouldn't qualify for this award, though, I don't think.
What about Rocket Man? What if he turns out to be Gandalf?
If that's the case, then every single person on the show qualifies for this.
Well, yeah, that's true. But someone like Rocket Man could be either or.
No, I was taking it as best original non-Tolkien character.
All right. Well, then who's the winner for this one for you?
It's a pretty easy one for me is Adar. Because he is the most... Well, him and the other person I chose, they fit the most in with their world. The story of Adar and like what they create for his backstory of the Uruks and the... Like he was a dark elf that was tainted like from the east or whatever. All of it ties in and makes sense with the world of Tolkien and how it could work out. And he's just like an extra character that was never mentioned before. So I think he fits really well into the world and was like a prime example of what they could do with a new original character.
That's a very good pick. And I did consider Adar for my winner, but I went a different route. And it's the one story thread that could always make you feel good. They really conveyed that well, especially with the main Harfoot, Nori. And to me, she was the best original character just because they took a risk by doing any original character. And this is one where any gamble they took really paid off. I think the Harfoot storyline fits in with everything, and it is original, so really well done.
Yeah, I agree. And my other choice was Sadok, who was also a Harfoot. So my runner-up would be Sadok, and he was just a fun, original character that really, really gave me the feeling of a down, hearty, wholesome hobbit. The things that he said, the things that he did, the way that he acted. So I thought the Harfoot stuff was mostly a success. I liked most of it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward the most probably to see what happens with the Harfoots next season.
Yeah.
Well, and Sauron. I'm interested to see if Sauron and Adar have a civil war because I think that might happen.
That could happen. That's in the cards.
Yeah. Well, that's in the predictions that's coming up soon. Mm. We do have a couple other things first, though. What's up next for the award show here?
Next up, we've got Rank the Episodes. Then we have our closing statements on season one and predictions for season two.
All right. Well, you said you did a very half-ass rank job, so you go ahead first. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to make it sweet and simple. There were two episodes in this entire show that really saved it for me. And the best episode was episode 8, the final episode, where I was almost out. We talked about this. Like, I was like almost done with it and just completely writing it off to be, you know, maybe the biggest failure of my lifetime on a television show that I anticipated. And the final episode, somehow they wrapped up all these mystery boxes that they'd created and all these MacGuffins that they'd led us on and tied it all back in and made me actually excited to see the next season of this just because of the way they did stuff. So kudos on you. Maybe they got us for the long con, and like at the end of all these seasons, when it's finally done, I'm going to be like, this is the greatest show ever done. And it all started with episode 8. Before that, episode 6 was the big battle scene, right?
Yep. That was Udun, I think, was the name of that one.
Yeah, Udun, where like all the shit goes down and Mordor is basically created. And that to me was like also a real... That was when it finally hit a next gear and I got excited about what was going down because it felt like
shit started to happen that episode finally.
Yeah, shit started to happen and like it also shit happened that made me feel like, okay, this is like missing information from Middle Earth that now I'm hearing and seeing. This is really cool, you know? So that was fun for me. So those episodes, and then my final ranking after that is ... who cares? Essentially, every other episode for me was like had some highlights, had some mostly lowlights, or was like drug or did whatever, particularly episode 7. But the episodes before that, it took a while to pick up. There were a few things that were fun, but everything else to me was a blur and they could all kind of blend it together. But episode
a lot of
six,
filler.
Yeah, episode 6 and 8 stood out for me for sure. What about you?
Well, I did the same two, at least, as you. The top two, I agree completely. Episode 8, episode 6, definitely, easily, 1 and 2. I went on with the list, though, and I put episode 3 as the next one. That was the introduction of Adar at the end, as well as the orc insurrection fight. I like that episode a lot, so that was three for me.
For Adar. That's the closing of that episode, right?
Yeah, and then Adar is all blurry at the end.
Yeah.
Then I went with episode two, because if I recall, probably 3 months ago when we started this, we both really did like episode two, mainly because of the introduction of the dwarves and the dwarven storyline.
Yeah.
So that was a strong episode, if only for that. So I put that fourth. Then I put episode four, and that is the one where Galadriel does the dance, as well as the Lohman thing. Then episode one, which for it to be this far back is what a letdown.
Should be a better hook, I feel.
Should have been a better hook, yep. Episode five was the one where literally nothing happened, where Elrond wondered if he should break his oath or not, and he did. And they wondered if they should go to war or not, and they did. We argued about Eärendil in that episode. Pretty fiercely.
See, no, that's a bad episode if it made us go into that deep.
Yep. And then the worst episode, you mentioned it, and I agree, was episode seven. Not only were they wasting their time, but they wasted ours. They even referenced it. They had an orc say they were wasting our time. Yeah. They lazily introduced the Balrog.
Yeah.
I mean, everything.
Everything about that was shit. It was like, you just came off of this killer episode six, and Jesus, way to let the air out of the balloon.
Yeah, it's like, who's everyone's two least favorite characters? Galadriel and Theo? Well, let's put them together for 40% of the episode.
That's true. I didn't think about it like that, but that's very funny.
God, it was awful. Yeah. So that, like, one was the worst episode.
It's like, you know, when your team comes out in football and they just, like, threw the ball down the field and tore it up the whole time, and you're like, yeah, they're going to come out firing again, and they run the ball three times and punt.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, what? Why would you choose to do that?
They punted on third down in this instance. They're just like, fuck it. We're not even going for the first.
Yeah. Wave the white flag.
And so that brings us to the proper time now. Season one is officially in the books. We've done a pretty good job of giving our thoughts throughout the season. We've had plenty of opportunities to talk about it. But to sum it up, what are your closing statements here for season one?
Well, I mean, there's things that I liked, and there's definitely things I didn't like. We did a lot of trashing the show the entire time of the show, and I feel a little guilty about that because I don't want to say I didn't enjoy it. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be one of the ones bringing the world down. There's enough haters out there. I don't want to be one of them.
There's enough hate out there, so there were things that were good about it. Some of those things are just like, you know, there were some interesting new stories, some interesting different stuff. Like I said, there's potential for them to make this like an unwritten history of Middle Earth. Like, you were there and now you're learning new stories about Middle Earth that you didn't know about. But when you go against things that don't work in the world that already have been set up, you set yourself up for scrutiny, I think. And then, like, the horrible dialogue, like, just really bad. Like, really
bad.
You know who's always right, though?
The sea.
The sea. The sea is always right.
Always.
All the decisions that the sea has ever made, it's never got one wrong, I don't think. How about Ule is always right? Or wait, Ormo. Which one's the sea god?
Olmo.
Yeah, how about Olmo's always right? I guess they can't use his name or something, but still, it's just like, it felt like they were ripping off Game of Thrones or something like that with the what is dead can never die sort of thing. And it just came off bad and it sucked.
Yeah, the dialogue, when I was grading the acting performances, I kept thinking, who delivered these shitty lines the best? Because everyone was written shitty lines, so it was just who worked with it the best. And that's why I settled on Durin.
Yeah, the actors were definitely fighting against the current.
Well, did you have any more closing thoughts on season one?
Well, I thought beautiful scenery, like some of the stuff, like the moments when you see Numenor and you're going through Numenor, and just Mordor when it becomes Mordor, the camera work, even the opening credits is just a really awesome, and Moria, like we said when we were in Moria, those were really awesome to actually be there and to see that stuff, because these are, you know, majestic settings that we've kind of thought about in our brain or seen pictures of that other people have drawn, but to put it on screen like that was pretty magnificent, I thought.
I would agree. Though I would also make the case that maybe they should reallocate some of the funds that they used on these special effects and the
to a writer.
To a writer, yeah. I mean, maybe just mix it up a little bit, take a little bit away from special effects and add to the story, add to the dialogue a bit, because that's where you're really lagging.
They're like that band that has all the most awesome equipment, and they're like every pedal you can imagine. They start playing, they're just absolute trash.
Yeah, that's a pretty good metaphor there.
yeah, that's true. So I think I wrote down limited potential. I don't know what that means though.
Maybe you were doing your fantasy football college notes for next year.
Yeah, limited on the same potential. Page. Breakout candidate,
maybe a fourth round pick,
weak Achilles tendon.
Yeah. Well, I agree with all the things that you said they need to improve upon, but my main takeaway and the biggest issue I had with season one was the pacing. And we talked about it a lot, but honestly, if they'd have just done the three episodes that were the best three episodes and taken out the other five, I don't think they would have missed much story-wise, and that's a problem. So either tell better stories when you're using these filler episodes, or don't tell them at all.
It was so slow.
Don't waste my time with the same story thread throughout the same episode.
Yeah,
five or six different scenes. We don't need that. Just do it once, or do it twice, or don't do it at all.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree 100% there. Oh, this is what limited potential meant. The potential that they had for this show was so high, like for us, I feel like as avid fans of this world, like there was unlimited potential for how good the show could be. And I think now having watched it and seeing where their minds are at with how they're creating it and how they're doing it, there's a certain sense of like, man, there's going to be some decent stuff, but there's going to be a lot of times where I'm just gritting my teeth and like cringing a little bit.
Well, I hope that's not the case, because I think they're going to have a pretty significant difference in the tone of season two, because you mentioned that several times everything was a mystery. Who's this? Who's that? Who's going to be this? I don't think they're going to go that route for season two, which leads us to what do we think is going to happen in season two?
I've got four bold predictions for season two.
I, too, have four, just on the off chance that you stole one of mine. We agreed on three, but I did four because we might have the same one.
I didn't realize we agreed on three. Who agreed on three?
I said something like 10, and you were like, no, that's way too many. Three.
Three is good. Four is perfect.
You said we were going to keep score, too, so when we can look back after season two is done and see who was right and who was wrong.
Well, I mean, think about it. Right now, we got four awards or four of these left. That's eight total for both of us. It's going to slide in perfect time for like right at an hour, a little above an hour on this episode. We're going to be we timed it perfect. You go to 10 apiece, and now we're talking an extra 30 minutes here.
Oh, yeah. 10's too much. I agree. Four will be fine. But if you say one I've already said, then I'm not going to say it. All right,
okay. So.
That's the way it's going to be.
Then I go first?
Yeah, one at a time, though. You get one, not four.
All right,
you go first. What's your first prediction for season two?
Bold prediction number one for season two. Nori and the Stranger never make it to Rune.
Ooh, interesting. What do you think's going to happen there?
I don't know. Read into that how you will, but I don't think they're going to make it to Rune. I think they're going to get sidetracked somehow, and something else is going to call them.
So you don't think they'll ever make it to Rune, or just not in season two?
Not in season two. I don't think they'll ever make it, but I'm going to go ahead and play the safe card and say just not in season two.
All right.
Well, just so I have more chance of being right.
Okay. Well, my first prediction also involves Rocket Man and Rune. And my prediction is that Rocket Man will encounter another wizard while in Rune.
That's a good one.
Maybe a blue wizard, maybe a Saruman, maybe even Radagast. I doubt it, but I think he might run into another wizard while he's out there.
All right. I like that. That's a fun one. Well, these are fun. I'm already having fun with it.
Oh, yeah. What you got for number two?
Number two, Gil Galad does a complete 180 as a character. Ooh. By the end of season two, we see all the good aspects of Gil Galad. And he's no longer the overbearing father. And now he's like going to help. Maybe he's going to help the dwarves fight in Moria against the Balrog.
That would be cool. I hope you're right about that one. I hope to give you a point for this because I really hope they turn Gil-galad around, and that would do it.
At least we see why he's the High King of the Noldor.
All right, I like that one, and I hope you're correct about that. My next one involves my winner for the Mighty Moisturizer, and that is Valindil. I predict that Valindil will become a featured cast member next year and will eventually become disgruntled by the return of Isildur. I think that's why they're doing this Isildur MacGuffin. I didn't want to mention it when we were talking about it earlier, is I think it's going to tie in to the story of Valindil. Maybe one turns good, one turns bad, something like that. One gets jealous over being usurped from a dead man or who he thinks is a dead man. Something along those lines. Maybe Elendil adopts Valindil somewhat as a son, but then kind of turns his back on him when his real son returns. Maybe that's something along those lines.
All right, that's a stretch. I like that. I don't see it happening, but I like where your head's at with it.
Oh, my predictions get stretchier as we go. So that's
okay. Good. Yeah, mine gets safer. I feel like as they go.
All right. Like, well, what's your next one?
Number three. In next season, now this has to be contained to season two, Sauron is captured by Pharazôn.
All right.
Which lines up in the story-wise, which actually means it probably won't happen.
Well, it's definitely going... Well, yeah, you're right. They might just break the lore and Sauron exactly. Just kills Pharazôn right away or something.
So, yeah, I'm trying to manifest it and make it happen by just saying it. Please... let Sauron be captured by Pharazôn, taken back to Numenor, and then that we progress with that storyline. Don't let it happen any other way. It wasn't so much a prediction as much as it was a prayer.
Well, I think that's almost cheating because it will happen. I mean, it happens in the story. Surely, surely they won't change that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. It's a safer bet. It happens in the real story. Will it happen in Amazon? You know, in Amazon Earth.
Real gutsy call there, Swami. Here's a true bold call for you, and it also involves Sauron. My third prediction is Sauron will be killed by Adar for a second time.
That's a good one. That's a deep twist if that happens.
Yeah, he'll be killed by Adar, take another form, eventually get his revenge on Adar. But it's going to be one of those... We're going to be rooting for Adar, I think, from here on out, if he and Sauron do go head-to-head. And we'll think that we've achieved victory with Adar, and then Sauron will pull the rug out with his third life and probably kill Adar. But the prediction officially is Adar kills Sauron again.
Okay. Well, now looking at my last prediction, I'm actually going to change it because it was a little vague. My prediction was... we'll see a lot more Isildur in season two. Or we'll get a lot more Isildur screen time. And I was actually fearing that. Now, I'm going to change that prediction on the spot right now. Here we go. Isildur is going to be the one that kills Adar. Oh. And he's going to take the Southlanders and kill Adar and create his own band of Middle-earthers there that end up going and creating... what's that city?
Gondor.
Gondor, yeah.
Wow, that was an on-the-spot prediction, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Very good. I like that. I like that turn for Isildur there.
Yeah. If he does that, maybe we can see him develop into the king that he should be and not this sniveling little brat that he is.
It would make even more sense if he sneaks up behind him and just kills Adar and then all the other Southlanders. They're just like, well, I guess we have to follow this guy now.
Yeah, he sneaks up, knifes him in the back, and then, like, holds us up. He's like, yeah, I killed him. I did, and takes all the glory.
Yeah, that fits Isildur's character. He's always taking the easy way out, so why not?
I mean, that's pretty much what kind of happens with Sauron, if the original story.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think he cut the ring. I mean, he cut the ring off his finger, but not in battle. It was, like, when he was already dead.
Oh, yeah, he was laying on the ground. He just got lucky with the swing, honestly.
Yeah, Sauron probably looked up and was like, hey, you fucking vulture. You won't let me die with my ring at least? Jesus.
Well, my final prediction, I think if it ends up being correct, I should get like 3 points because this one is a real long shot and it's just a gut feeling here.
Yours are so long. I feel like I should give you three for all of them.
All right. Well, I'll take three.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Well, this one is the longest shot, but I'm going to predict here there will be a major character death next season, and I think it will be Bronwyn at the hands of Waldrig.
That's a long shot, though. Like, those characters are in the same realm of existence and equality, so that would make sense. I could see that happening.
It could happen. Yeah,
it could happen.
It's a total hunch shot, but it could happen.
Definitely could happen. So those are good predictions. How about this? Since both of our last ones, I feel like, are pretty long shots, the last prediction will be weighted 5 points. All other predictions will be weighted 2 points.
Deal.
All right.
Done and done.
And if it's a tie, I win.
Oh, all right. Shake. Fair.
No, you said okay. You were about to say okay.
I was about to say okay, but you took such safe predictions that now, if it's a tie, I win.
Okay, that's actually probably true. Yeah.
True and
fair. Well, that was not safe. Not real safe. I mean. Nori and the Stranger said they were going to Rune, you know.
Well, they said that, but we also know that Gandalf never goes east, so you had some hints to lead.
Don't know if it's Gandalf. We don't know.
You made smart predictions. I made
wild predictions.
Yeah, dumb predictions. Yeah.
Wild. They're wild. They're not dumb. They actually made sense to me, at least. But they're longer shots for sure. So yeah, if we tie, you win, because you have you get the spread.
Deal. That's done. And the Rings of Power now finally are done for us. I'm going to miss Middle Earth.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? Like, it's not just been just this show. Like, it's been consuming, I think, our lives in general with just books and YouTube and whatever it is, or podcasts or whatever. And maybe I'm going to take a little break from Middle Earth so I can step away and come back to it.
Come back refreshed. Yeah, it's always nice to take a break just so you can appreciate it more when you come back.
Yeah, I never quite finished Unfinished Tales, which is fitting.
So that's very fitting.
I unfinished Unfinished Tales, so I got like, you know, maybe 40, 50 pages left, and I'm like, I want to dive back in. I don't know.
Well, you say you take a break, but I won't be surprised at all if you send me a Gimli GIF in the morning, yeah, something like yeah, that. You normally send some Lord of the Rings stuff my way, and it's always welcome as well.
I got three or four of them lined up, so
yeah, it might take a break temporarily, but it's always going to have a spot.
Yeah, well, just the biggest task is making sure I don't send any dick pics. So
yeah, well,
accidentally,
feel free, no big deal.
Oh, okay, all right, then I'll just send those first.
Hey, if you send me a dick pic, I will consider it a gift.
A gift.
Anatar.
Oh, yeah. Consider it a gift.
Consider it a gif.
Yeah. Consider it a gif. What if that's what he said to Celebrimbor, and then he just did that right over again?
How,
like,
has no one made that a meme yet? Consider it a gif. And then,
oh, dude,
it into
that's
a
gold right there. We that just did. Gold. If I knew how to make a meme, I would make it right now like that. Consider it a gif.
We have so many good ideas, and we don't know how to do them.
Yeah, God, we are only limited by our own idiocy.
Yes. Well, speaking of good ideas and idiocy, we have made it a Christmas tradition here to review one Christmas special movie every year. We're now entering our third year of the podcast, or we're well within the third year of our podcast.
Third Christmas, for sure.
Third Christmas. And yeah. First Christmas, we started to tell the tale of burgeoning young serial killer Kevin McAllister and his mob father with Home Alone 1. Then,
yeah, a lot of mixed feelings about that too, because a lot of people believe Kevin McAllister is actually, you know, the hero of that story, but we saw him for what he truly was, I think.
We did, and then we saw his denigration as a human in the second one, when his traps became even more sadistic, and he moved on.
His friends, unsavory, yeah, homeless people in the park.
He went from friendly serial killer neighbor friends to now homeless pigeon lady friends. And he displayed a lot of tendencies of a pure sociopath. We discussed them at length in the podcast of Home Alone 2. So you can listen to that if you want. But what we are leading into here and what we have alluded to in those previous Christmas episodes is a third part of the Kevin McAllister saga.
The untold story.
Oh, it's told. It's just unlabeled as such.
The unlabeled story of Kevin McAllister.
Yes. So, for episode number 99 in the third year Christmas special, we're going to finish the Kevin McAllister trilogy with The Good Son.
Oh, yeah. I am so excited about this movie. He is so, and it fits so well with everything we said. He's like a little playful demon in this one, though, you know? Like, he's
it's the same dude, except he's actually killing people.
Yeah, it's Kevin McAllister. Now he's actually killing and hurting and maiming people. So The Good Son is a deep track, and I don't think a lot of people like it. I'm pretty sure it got pretty low scores.
Oh, I love this movie, man. I might rate it higher than we rated The Home Alones for a different reason, but it's a good movie.
Well, we rated The Home Alones pretty high, didn't we?
Yeah, like 15, 14, something.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's average for us.
That's a good movie. It could hit in that land. It could hit in that area. It's been a while since I rated anything, so.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Shit, we didn't rate this whole season.
Did we not? Let's do that real quick.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings, season one. Ranking Ranta Taco rating out of 20, what score are you going to give it?
The last episode saved it. It would have been not worth rewatching. The last episode hit it right on the mark, puts it at a 10.
Puts it at a 10?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, to me it was it fell very short in a lot of areas, and I wouldn't have been looking forward to season two at all had the last episode not hit, so I'm going to give it a flat 10. It saved itself. This is like a teacher's warning to a kid. I'm going to give you the C. It's a wake-up call. You better get a fucking B or an A next test, okay?
All right. I kind of like that and your logic behind that. My score is a bit higher, though, because in my mind, it automatically had to be above 10 because there was no way I was not going to watch the next season. So it's rewatchable in the sense that I'm going to watch the whole series, no matter how bad it gets. Yeah. So it was going to be a 10 or higher. And the last episode brought it up to almost being good, which would have been a 15. So I'm going to give it a 14 out of 20. And maybe that's a little too generous, but I think our logic is just a little different. We're kind of on the same feeling with that.
But you were kind of the whole time, you know, on a little bit more of the side of the show, I think. I think I was a little more critical of you, even though we were both hypercritical of it. I think I was a little bit more negative in my outlook.
For sure, especially in episode 7. I had to talk you off the ledge, man. You might not remember, but it was dark.
I definitely don't remember, but that has nothing to do with that episode. It has probably to do with the Negronis.
Yeah, well, it was a dark time in the podcast.
It was a dark time. I resorted to heavy liquor to start drinking, and it was just I couldn't make it through the show without it. So, but it got us here, and I'm looking forward to next season. And you know,
well, you said a really smart thing by calling it a wake up call, because when we did the Lord of the Rings series, they were all 20s, 19s, 20s, and for this to get a 10 and a 14 out of us, I mean, we love this stuff. Imagine being a casual watcher. You're talking 5,
that's what I'm saying.
4. Like, it's not good. So
that's what I'm saying. If Amazon, if you lose my interest in this show, you're fucked.
Yeah, you've lost everyone's
There's nobody that cares more about this earth than me and you, who are both obsessed with Middle Earth. So, I mean, there are people that care that much, but it's like we're on that same train, you know? We care this much about the world. Like, have some respect for it and just care for it, you know, how
same
it should be
us.
Cared for. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Agreed. And so that grade does actually put a bow on the Rings of Power. Can't believe we almost forgot to grade it, man. That's jeez.
Yeah, whoops. That's
we
funny.
We spent 10 weeks doing this, and we're like, fuck it. We've done a grade for 100 other movies, but let's forget to grade this.
Yeah, it's just a pass or fail grade this time.
it passed barely.
Yeah, and it's actually non-applicable. So we're going to give it an NA in this one.
Well, to finish it up with a segue, Lord of the Rings has Elijah Wood, and so does The Good Son. So coming next week. Welcome back, Elijah Wood. Welcome back, Macaulay Culkin. And one last thing to say, and that for me is, Hail Morgoth.
Hail Morgoth.
And hail to your mother as well.
Hail to your mother.
And I think we're done. Do you have anything else to add before we sign this thing off?
Hell no.
Hell no. All right. Well, one last time. Khazad
Doom.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for the Rings of Power. And we'll see you next week for the Christmas special, The Good Son.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Movies from Webster to Morocco. Who needs Rotten Tomatoes when you've got the Rancid Tacos?
This podcast is brought to you by West Virginia Pepperoni Rolls.